When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kid's PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
You just take your shot. It doesn't feel like you're on a diet. What I wasn't expecting it to do was to shut off the food noise. This was life-altering, and if I can do it, I feel like anybody can do it.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Old Lady Speaks podcast on Black and White and Red All Over. This is your host, Danny, coming to you for episode number 58. And I want to tell you guys a quick story before we get going here. It was a quiet Monday morning. I woke up around 9:30 thinking, hey, you know, let's check in on the daily transfer rumor, see what the Italian press has reported when I was sleeping. And then Giorgio Chiellini signs a contract extension. Okay. And then right after that, Juventus actually agree to sign a player. So a quiet Monday has now turned into a busy Monday. So luckily for us, not only do we have a busy Monday and Italy internationals and the Brazilians coming back, so the full squad is a full squad again, we have our full squad back. So it's turned into a wonderful Monday. So with all that fake enthusiasm behind us, I can bring in Samuel Presti. Hello, Sam.
Get into it, Danny. This is fun. We haven't had a bit. We haven't had anything but slow news days in a while. I'm down.
That's right. We've got Chucks. Hello, Chucks.
Yeah, I didn't know it was fake enthusiasm. I thought it was very real enthusiasm, actually. Yeah. But as the great Eddie Murphy once sang, and yes, he did sing. Let's party all the time.
That's right. With Rick James.
He did. Yes. Yes.
Come on, Eddie Murphy.
Nice. Good call. Good call. Thank you.
And back from car problems, we've got Sergio Romero. Hello, Sergio.
Hey, fellas. Happy to be here. Happy to be back. Been a couple chaotic weeks personally, but not for Juve. So I'm happy to be back. Happy to have some good news to speak of. Well, news. Let's not get ahead of ourselves, but actual news. So yeah, happy to be here. Happy to get into the show.
And as you listeners can tell, Sergio is obviously clearly depressed from Mexico's Gold Cup loss to the United States.
I do not recognize the Gold Cup. It's just
that was a response I knew was coming, and I got exactly what I wanted.
He's still got the Olympics, though. Still got the Olympics.
Yes, they play Brazil at like a 2 a.m. my time. So yeah, I'm not watching it live, but I will try to avoid any spoilers and watch it when I wake up. Yeah, the Gold Cup is one of those things that really, and it's going to sound very presumptuous, but it's one of those cups that Mexico has really no upside. Like if they lose it, it's like a, you know, national embarrassment. And if they win it, it's like, oh, well, you were supposed to win it. It's the Gold Cup. Who cares? So I don't even know why they play it at this point. But yeah, I watched Army of the Dead on Netflix instead of the final. Good movie. Batista's in it. I didn't know that. So yeah, it's good movie.
Good old recommend. You're not going to stay up late to watch Danny Alves take on Mexico.
No, I will not. I unfortunately have a job, but you know, it is what it is. I hope the lads do well there.
Well, here's an easy transition from a mention of an old Brazilian to a mention of a young Brazilian that's about half of Danny Alves' age. And Juventus has actually signed a player, as we heard from Santos a couple hours before we hit record here. And then here's the first attempt. Caio Jorge, I think, is how we're going to go with it for now. We might get about 17 different pronunciations of it before this podcast is over with. But Juventus have reportedly signed him for $3 million with another potential million add-on in what I would assume is performance-related bonuses. Half of that will be going to Santos this summer. Half of it will be going to next summer. And we'll obviously wait Juventus's press release to see what the actual financial details of it are, if there's sell-on clauses or anything like that. But since Sam has been writing about the rumors over the last few days, as Juventus came seemingly out of nowhere to sign this 19-year-old striker, your thoughts on Juventus's first official signing of the summer?
I like it. It's certainly not an immediate impact move, but it's really low risk and really high reward potentially. And I really like the smash and grab that the front office just did on this. Here's a guy that a couple of teams were really into, including AC Milan. You know, Benfica was liked him so much they wanted to put a player into it along with the transfer fee. But he apparently really wanted to come to Serie A. And then we just kind of cut the line in front of Milan and signed him to this pre-contract. And at that point, Santos had very, very little wiggle room because they could either lose him for nothing at the end of December or get something, get whatever Juve were willing to give them now. It apparently is that weird little wriggle where somebody was somehow claiming that his contract ran for another 2 years was apparently that person who, and somebody's head's probably rolling at Sky Sport Italia right now, because that guy that they interviewed, apparently the Santos is saying, yeah, he has no connection to the club at all. We don't know what the heck he was talking about, which is good for them because they would have been in line for some really bad FIFA violations if that had been the case. But this is a striker with a lot of potential. In the research, in researching him, trying to get to look through some games, and I tried unsuccessfully to actually dig into my Paramount Plus that I have access to and look at some Brazilian league that they have archived in there, but that was a bit of a fruitless search, but just because the interface was wonky for me that day. But the thing that strikes me most is the way he can dribble. He can dribble in and out of trouble like very few people that I've seen play for Juventus lately, and he's only 19. Like, you see him get into some real pickles and get right back out of it again and pass the ball off and keep possession going. Finishing needs a little work, got to polish it, but few 19-year-olds don't need that. That's very rare. And, you know, he's not going to have a lot of pressure, which I think is a big deal. He's not coming in here expected to lead this line. He's in here to learn and to take his opportunities when they come. And you know, he's got a lot of really good forwards to learn and combine with. And I think more than anything, you know, they said that this whole project with Max Allegri was going to be focused on a rejuvenation of the squad and making the team younger and kind of building on a new project. And I think this is that kind of signing to see what this kid can do and watch him develop. Max Allegri, I think, has a really great track record with younger forwards like this. You know, we've seen him get really great first returns out of guys like Paulo Dybala and Alvaro Morata and Moise Kean, and even going back to when he was at AC Milan, Stefan El Shaarawy. So I think he's in a really good position to learn and improve and become a contributor. But obviously, we have to see, you know, for every Lautaro Martinez that comes out of South America, there's also a Gabigol. So it's not a sure thing. Very few 19-year-olds are. But this is a really talented kid. And if he can bring it all together and bring it to bear, it's going to be a really good thing for Juventus. And this could be a deal that we talk about, you know, in the same kind of breath as deals like Andrea Barzagli, in terms of just what kind of a steal it was, if all goes really, really well. I just love the approach. It's like what we did with McKennie last year. It's like a lot of the earliest moves that Beppe Marotta made that started setting up the streak in those first couple of transfer windows. Guys like Vidal, who, you know, wasn't necessarily a huge name at the time. It's going to be really fun to watch this kid, I think. And I'm really intrigued to see where he goes. And I really like the signing, and I really like the direction that the front office took with it.
All right, Chucks, how many YouTube highlight videos have you watched?
Approximately 0.000. I haven't quite done my homework on him yet. So therefore, I'm going to take a little bit of a different approach on my perspective, I guess. You know, yeah, Sam, you mentioned that Allegri has had a really good record with young players, which, yeah, definitely. I mean, that's, you know, good. I guess the only comparison or different thing with, I'm going to try it, Caio Jorge, I'll stick with that one. The only kind of, I guess, a decent attempt.
There's no wrong answer with us. This is our first time, Chucks.
At least I know we tried, you know. Hey, we got Chesney, right, eventually, I think. Did I? I don't know. Yeah, I guess the only, you know, different thing here with him is that, I mean, this kid is fresh out of high school. I mean, he's like, I did do a little bit of research, and I mean, he's been a professional player for, I mean, just about 3 years, basically. Well, according to Wikipedia, anyway. So, you know, he is, I mean, very, very, very fresh indeed. So, you know, in comparison with the other young players that Allegri has developed, you know, Dybala, Morata, El Shaarawy, etc. Those players were, well, A, they had been professionals for longer, but then B, they'd also been in Europe for longer. I mean, Dybala was at Palermo for a while, of course, Morata as well, and Shaarawy too, El Shaarawy as well. So, you know, there's a bit more of a familiarity there with those players compared to Jorge. So, yeah, I mean, this kid is, I mean, he's 19, he's, you know, fresh out of high school, which, I mean, is fine. I mean, it's good, bad, it could be anything. You see clubs like, you know, Borussia Dortmund take players that are, I mean, extremely raw and young, and that is their identity, you know, and that's clearly, I mean, worked very well for them. Not quite well enough to get them championships, but has worked very well for them. So, yeah, I mean, overall, you know, like Sam said, I mean, it's a very low financial risk move. And yeah, I mean, I'm trying to think of what could be the worst case scenario. I mean, there's really not much I could go wrong here. Of course, I mean, it could end up being a flop, but you know, again, low risk financially. I'm guessing pretty low salary as well, unless, I don't know, kids these days, I don't know what money they want. It's all these millennials and Gen Zers, but a kid, I'm millennial myself.
I was going to say, I've said this already in previous episodes. You're younger than me.
It's important to mention that Chucks is 28, if I recall correctly. Yes. So
I am indeed.
You know,
I am indeed. Just making sure people are still paying attention. You know, people might be, I don't know, they might be at the gym listening to this and be like, oh yeah, I guess he is. I guess he's not millennial, whatever.
for the record, Chucks was pretending to bench press. You guys can't see it, but yeah, we right. can. So Chucks was bench pressing as he said, people are working out as they listen to our podcast.
Yeah. Or watching people in the Olympics press three times my body weight, but anyway. But yeah, no, one I guess last thing on Jorge is that, I guess my question is, so from what I understand, he's a center forward, so technically he has pretty little competition if you think about it. I mean, okay, there's Morata, there's Dybala, and there's Ronaldo, but I mean, we still don't really know what formation slash what tactical setup Allegri is going to play. Is it going to be a two center forward system? Is it going to be, you know, a one center forward system? We still don't, you know, I mean, we don't know. If it's a one center forward position, then okay, yes, yes, a little bit more competition there. Again, with Morata and Dybala and Ronaldo. But if it is a two center forward setup, then I mean, he's basically going to be a backup to the two main center forwards, which is fine. I mean, he's 19. That's fine. But that's, I guess, kind of my only question. I'm like, okay, what is his position in the pecking order, really? Is it really an immediate replacement, or is it kind of a little lower down the totem pole, or down the food chain, I should say? And will he play with Primavera for a while, or, you know, whatever? Yeah, who knows? Who knows? But overall, yeah, hey, man, I'm all for it. And, you know, welcome, or benvenuto, or I don't speak Portuguese, so welcome.
Yeah, unlike Chuck's, I did watch a number of highlight videos in YouTube, scored to some pretty ghastly EDM electronic dance music.
Oh, God, that was like, I turned it on to mute for a while.
Which, as far as I understand, it's like a prerequisite for all these highlight videos. I don't know, but it does seem to be a recurring trend. But, you know, the thing that jumps out to me the most, and I'm glad that both Sam and Chucks took like the actual analysis of it of my hands, because the only thing that I can say is it's exciting. It's exciting. It's exciting to have, you know, I think it's been a while since Juve kind of signed the, you know, the hot young startlet from South America on board. I don't really remember, you know, another kid, you know, that young, that unproven coming to Juve. I remember the team being kind of like on the conversations for, like Sam said, Gabigol and Gabriel Jesus, if I remember correctly. They were kind of in the discussion, but, you know, they didn't pull the trigger at the end. So it's just exciting to have a guy like him who, like Sam said, is far from a finished product, but you can definitely tell he has a lot of skills. He has a lot of talent. And, you know, it's just exciting to have a guy like this, that if things break correctly for him, which we can argue whether or not that place is Juventus at this moment, but, you know, if things break correctly for him, I can definitely see him becoming a very, very good player in the future. And it's just, you know, it's just thrilling for Juan as a fan to have a guy like that with that amount of potential in the team, especially, you know, especially if you take into account, you know, something that Sam actually mentioned in his latest piece on the site about how, you know, the under 23, the Juventus youth ranks have been kind of barren as of late. So to have this guy coming in and to have him pretty much a given that he's not going to go to the under 23, he's actually going to go to the first team. He's actually going to get minutes because that, you know, center forward rotation is not very deep. It's just fun. It's just exciting. You know, I would equate it to having, you know, when your team in the NFL has been in the, you know, has no quarterback, and then they draft a guy and you buy, you know, you kind of like believe in that guy and you buy into that guy, even if he sucks. But, you know, it's just for a few years, it's fun. It's just really fun to kind of think, no, he can definitely take the next step. And, you know, sometimes it pans out, sometimes it doesn't. But it's just an interesting wrinkle, and it's an interesting, you know, story that we will develop throughout the season. So, yeah, I'm excited. And nothing that you guys didn't say, you know, I think financially is just an incredible deal. I mean, we're talking tops. Juventus is going to shell out $4 million. So even if he's a flop, even if he gets just a few minutes here and there, $4 million in today's economy is, you know, really a drop in the bucket. And I think it's going to help with having, you know, lower expectations from both the fan base and probably himself, because he's not going to have that, you know, price tag hanging over his head like another talented youngster, for example, Dejan Kulusevski, who, you know, he was different situation. He was already playing in Europe. He was already in Serie A, but, you know, Juventus shelled out over 35 million euros for him, if I remember correctly. So that definitely adds a lot of pressure, you know, to have that price tag over your head. So the fact that he came here cheap, he managed to come here during the summer, so his adaptation will probably be faster. All of that is just good stuff that can happen to him. So So I'm excited. I literally see no downside to this signing.
And one thing that you just said, Sergio, that to touch on something that Chucks had said, this is not a stash. He's not going to be playing for the youth teams. He's not going to be playing for the under 23. If he knew that we were going to be maneuvering him towards Serie C, he would have signed with Milan, because this was essentially a free agent deal, given the fact that he was in the last 6 months of his contract. So he could come to these pre-contract agreements. He's going to be in the first team. I'm going to dispute a little bit the idea that he's got, you know, that he's quite so fresh and quite so inexperienced. I mean, yes, the Brazilian league is not often talked about as, you know, a major thing in terms of competition when you compare them to top European leagues. But this is a guy that's had 84 first team appearances since he was 16. That is a really significant amount of action. 19 appearances in the Copa Libertadores, which is definitely not a joke. That's some pretty high level competition in that. So I do think that he has that kind of, that he does have some experience of those higher level competitions. It's very similar to Rodrigo Bentancur when he came over. He had already played in a bunch of River Plate versus Boca Juniors derbies. He had played in South American continental competition. And I think that was a real help as he started climbing the ladder a little early. So I definitely think that that's going to be a plus for him as he sets out on this particular journey here at Juve.
So we got one deal down, and I think it's safe to say we're hoping for another one to happen in the near future. And in terms of arrivals, and that's obviously Manuel Locatelli. And it feels like we've been in the same kind of holding pattern for the last couple weeks, where it's Juventus Sassuolo meet, Juventus puts forward another offer, Sassuolo says no, rinse, repeat, here we go, and they'll meet again in a few days or at the beginning of the new week. And while we're recording here on Monday, Juventus and Sassuolo are supposed to meet tomorrow, I believe. So there's that, but there's also now the added dimension of the Christian Romero deal between Atalanta and Tottenham happening, and then Juventus is then potentially going to send Matty Demiral to Atalanta to fill Romero's spot. Sorry, Sergio, by the way. And
tough. It was tough.
And then obviously Demiral would take Romero's spot on Atalanta's roster. So there are dominoes that need to happen before Locatelli becomes a Juventus player, but it feels like we're inching closer and closer and closer. And obviously a potential loan with option to buy deal between Juventus and Atalanta for Demiral would give Juventus a much needed influx of money to then send that money right over to Sassuolo. And now I'm tired of talking, so somebody else talk about Manuel Locatelli joining Juventus.
Make it happen, damn it. no, but this is what had to happen. And, you know, you were hoping that the sale would have been somebody like, you know, Aaron Ramsey, who we all don't want on the team anymore. It is mildly surprising to me that no, like, mid-table Premier League team that really overestimates what British talent can do hasn't ponied up a little bit of money to try to take Ramsey off of our hands, but it's probably a salary thing at that
Arsenal,
point.
Are you listening? Arsenal, are you listening?
But I was talking with a friend today who is not particularly happy about the idea of Demiral leaving. And he said something like, we're only 5 million away from Sassuolo in terms of the money. We shouldn't have to be moving a player for this. And I said back to him, yeah, but we've been 5 million away from Sassuolo for the last 3 weeks with no movement whatsoever. Yes, we do have to move a player in order to get this done. And that is, in one respect, a pretty awful statement on the state of Juve's finances. And, you know, and we talked about this a couple of weeks ago about, you know, whether or not we would be happy about losing Demiral. But at the end of the day, if Demiral gets moved on and Daniele Rugani and Radu Dragosin end up the back end of the center back depth chart, in order to make sure that Manuel Locatelli is a Juventus player, I'm fine with that. You know, Demiral's the fourth name on the depth chart right now at center back. He's not going to get the minutes that he needs to improve this Juventus team unless something catastrophic happens to the players in front of him. Is it a hard pill to swallow? Yes, but this team needs Locatelli more than it needs anything else in this transfer window. And that move's got to get done. And so if you get, you know, you take the money that you get from the loan phase, tack that on to what you're already offering, and that puts you over the top. Thank goodness Locatelli only wants Juventus, because by this point, he would have been an Arsenal player a long time ago. But, you know, it's got to be done in the end. And, you know, yeah, losing a player as with the potential of Demiral bites, but gaining a player with the proven ability of Manuel Locatelli is more important. And if this is what it's going to do it, then get it done.
So Sergio, are you happy that a potential Demiral departure opens the door for young prospect Daniele Rugani to come back and fulfill his potential at Juventus?
Yeah, finally. Talk about a guy that hasn't had any chances. I swear to God, he's going to play a lot. And I'm going to be upset about it a lot as well, because that's the thing. And I mostly agree with everything that Sam said about Locatelli, because I do think that he, in a way, he can unlock a lot of things in this squad. He can, not just by him being on the team and what he brings by himself, just his positional fit in this team can help the squad overall. I think bringing him into the team is not so much as bringing a very talented player, but also allowing other players to really kind of be put in the best position to succeed. So bringing Locatelli also implies that, you know, Adrian Rabiot is going to be put in a better position to succeed. Same goes for Rodrigo Bentancur. So I do agree that you know, Locatelli is a must-have for the team this season. I do agree with that. The only thing that you know, and if worse comes to worse, I agree with Sam. I think you have to do it. It has to get done. The only thing that does worry me is that, and I'm jumping a little bit ahead of the other block of news we have to do, but with Giorgio Chiellini, he showed that he can still play. He showed that he can still play at a very high level. We all know how that story goes. He's the captain. He's a Juve legend. He's going to show that for a couple months tops, and then he's going to get hurt. And it is what it is. We've seen this the last few years. No fault of his own. It's the age. It's the body. It's, you know, it's going to happen. And once that happens, you know, your quote unquote fourth, you know, center back on the depth chart is the third. And if you're still playing deep in several competitions, as we hope Juventus is this year, you know, that is going to involve some rotation, and it's going to involve that third guy getting a lot of minutes. And that third guy is going to be Daniele Rugani again. And we know he's not good. We know he's not good. And he's going to have to get those minutes. And Leo Bonucci is not getting any younger. He hasn't been as unreliable as Chiellini, but there's a reasonable chance that he also gets hurt. And if those two dudes miss any time, you're really looking at a very thin depth chart. And that's what would worry me about, you know, moving on from Demiral. And pretty much at that point, your season hangs on the feet of Daniele Rugani and Radu Dragosin, who, you know, we really don't know anything about him. He's very young, very raw. You know, he could be anything. So at that point, I do think you're playing a very dangerous game, because we know for a fact that Giorgio Chiellini is going to get hurt at some point. So I think, considering the assets that this team has, you have to flip Demiral. It is what it is. But I would, you know, in a perfect world, I would love to see them bring in another serviceable center back, another guy in to kind of fill in that depth, because there is a very, very real scenario that Daniele Rugani plays important minutes for this team. A joke that I've been making for like 6 months because I thought it had no chance of happening, and it's going to happen. And I just can't believe we're here, but it is what it is. I mean, you have to make tough decisions, and that's the tough decision that's going to have to get made.
To quote you, Sergio, you talked it into existence.
Yes, unfortunately, in the bad sense.
Yeah, Illuminati confirmed, didn't it? Well, Sergio took the words out of my mouth on that one. You know, it's funny, though, that I have spoken vocally about my lack of belief in Demiral, and I didn't know that...
You have.
I have. But I didn't know that someone had a more outspoken opinion, but then on Daniele Rugani, so... I know where Sergio stands now with all matters Rugani.
Legend, though. Let's give him his credit. Preseason legend for you. Sure. Like,
right. Always raise the trophy over the weekend.
Lifted the trophy. Hey, listen, trophy's a trophy.
I'm right. I'm right.
Is that one going into the J Museum along with all the other ones? Or
yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
If they didn't forget it in the stadium, I'm sure it'll end up somewhere.
but yeah, no, Sergio, I mean, you're right. We do kind of have an issue in defense, and it's weird. I mean, even though I don't really believe in Demiral, it's like, you're right. It would kind of create a pretty problematic situation, assuming that we don't sign another central defender / sign another central defender of, well, equal or greater quality. Which, you know, as a wise man once said, in this economy, that's going to be, hard to do. So it's weird, you know. I think I've started to realize that, well, most of life, I guess, but in this case, football is really just a game of trading one problem for the other. So, you know, obviously we have issues in midfield, so then hopefully fix it for the most part, hopefully fix it with getting Locatelli. So fix that problem, and now you're trading in another problem in the center of defense. And then, well, if we, I don't know, sign another player there of greater quality, well, we're going to have to sacrifice something. So then we're creating another problem. So you're just constantly shifting problems around around the club. It's kind of like a musical chairs of problems, which, it's not very nice. But I guess, I mean, that's just the nature of life. So... You know, like Sam said, I mean, at this point with Locatelli, I mean, everybody knows we want him. Sassuolo knows we've been talking to Sassuolo. Locatelli knows that how much we want him. He seems to very much want to come. I mean, it's, I think in the next, week or two, something's going to have to happen. Otherwise, I mean, I just don't really see it happening anymore. I mean, if we're going to get another Paulo Dybala contract extension, like the duration of that whole ordeal, I mean, my God, just shoot me now. I mean, like that, I'm just not willing to subject myself to such torture. I really do hope he comes, but yeah, I mean, we're reaching a phase where it's like something's going to have to happen. Otherwise, well, you know, might just be arrivederci, Manuel.
I want to say one thing about Locatelli too, is that, you know, Locatelli, he's been back at training at Sassuolo for a couple of days now. Compare that to Harry Kane, who's like pretty much straight up gone on strike to force Tottenham into selling him to Manchester City at whatever number Manchester City wants to give Tottenham. And that's a difference in mentality that I think is stark, and it makes me want Locatelli all the more, because you can tell that he's got that dedication and that, you know, that professionalism to just, you know, he's going to go and do his job. And, you know, if the transfer does come down in the next couple of days, then he'll just come to turn and he'll do his job there. I like that. And also I just wanted to reiterate something I said, I think last week, which was that when it comes to Chiellini and injuries, surprisingly enough, the coach out of the last three seasons that's kept Chiellini the healthiest has been Max Allegri. You know, obviously you had the major catastrophic knee injury under Sarri, but you know, Allegri seemed to have a good rotation system worked out for Chiellini much the same as he did for Buffon when before Buffon left, that kept him really pretty good that last season that Allegri was there. So if there's reason to be optimistic in that regard, I think that's one reason. And as opposed to Rugani, I mean, you know, we ruined him. It's our own damn fault that he's like this now. You know, if we hadn't signed Mehdi Benatia, the human mental error to jump ahead of him on the depth chart after he finished his first season in really nice fashion, maybe he would have actually developed instead of just stagnating on the bench behind, you know, Benatia making yet another mistake.
No, he's bad. He's bad. I think Rugani's no, bad. He will forever be
you
bad.
And I, you and I are going to have to disagree on this one, Sergio.
If you can't outplay Benatia, then you're just not good. Like
he never gave him the chance to, because it's because the disease of Italian football means that age is one of the deciding factors in who gets into the starting 11.
Get that.
And Benatia chance. Was the older player, so Allegri put him in.
Matthijs de Ligt played because he's good. I mean, just like when a guy is good enough.
Matthijs de Ligt also cost 85 million euros. So there's another factor there, as opposed to Rugani, guy is good enough, he nearly plays. That much.
Rugani sucks. He always sucked. He had one good season. We bought high. It happens. You know, it is what it is. I bought myself into it. You know, whatever. We're going to get a lot of him next year. So redemption. I guess that's going to be a good story if he does get redemption.
I'm going to put myself into the line of fire at my own risk here. But I guess the only thing with Rugani that I would slightly lean in Sergio's argument for is that, I mean, he did get other chances at, I mean, other clubs. I mean, okay, loan deals and, you know, they're 6-month deals, but
just one.
Two.
Just Cagliari last year.
Cagliari and Rennes, I thought, right?
Oh, Rennes, yeah. But he was hurt. He was hurt that. The first half of the year. That's why he didn't play.
Fair enough. But yeah, I don't know. It's, I agree. I mean, with the old Italian tendency to just prioritize, you know, seniority over giving youth a chance, and just that. And I mean, many players have talked about that. Many coaches have talked about that too. But yeah, I don't know. Something does tell me that if Rugani really was that good, surely something somewhere somehow would have happened. But I don't know. I don't have a particularly strong opinion on this one.
And it has nothing to do with the fact that the very first article I ever wrote for this site had to do with Rugani at all, either.
I mean, if anything, you know, the weird thing is, I mean, it's like at any club, if there was any club that a defensive player should, you know, love to be at and love to shine, it would be, you know, a club like Juve, especially, you know, back when he was still developing, we actually cared about defending. So, you know, especially back then, it would be the ideal time to do it. But yeah, I don't know. It didn't come off. But then again, I mean, he's 27. It's still relatively young for a defender.
Yes.
So, you know, that.
Yes. Drink the Kool-Aid, Chuck. Let's go. I'm in. If Rugani is any good this year, I will buy an official Juve kit, like the match worn, like the match official thing with Rugani's name on it. Ship it from Italy. I do not care, because he is not good. And he will cost this team at some point if he plays. I am damn sure of it. Rooting against it. I want that kit. But, you know, it is what it is at this point with him.
Let the record show then that Sergio put that bet on. Let the record show.
That's right. And I can't wait until Daniele Rugani is MVP in one of the grab bags. That's going to be fun.
That's going to be really fun.
All right. Well, we mentioned Giorgio Chiellini, and I think it's safe to say we're all happy that he's back, even though, you know, he's got the whole injury situation that I think we're all mentally preparing for. So we'll move on a little bit to what Max Allegri had to say after Juventus's friendly over the weekend in the aforementioned Berlusconi Cup and the much deserved Berlusconi Cup win, or whatever you want to call it at this point, since it's the Berlusconis and, you know, everything that comes with the Berlusconis is
the Bunga Bunga party.
That's right. There you go. You said it, not me, Charles. But I think the two most important things are obviously what Max Allegri had to say about Dejan Kulusevski, and that he, and I'm reading here, he's got a lot of potential, but he needs to improve a lot. I think after watching his first season in Juventus, we can all agree that is definitely the case. But the most noticeable thing that Max Allegri said had to do with Aaron Ramsey and Aaron Ramsey playing as a deep-lying midfielder, which when I saw the lineups over the weekend, I was very surprised that it was Aaron Ramsey pulling the strings at the base of the midfield. So, Chuck, since you have obviously been somebody who's had a few things to say about this midfield, how excited were you to see Aaron Ramsey pulling the strings against Monza over the weekend?
Well, as the great Kevin Keegan of Newcastle once said, I love it. No, I don't. I just wanted to do that accent, which was such a classic video, that one, or interview rather. But, well, not excited, obviously, but I appreciate Allegri for experimenting in preseason, for using preseason what it's supposed to be used for, which is experimentation. And I mean, fitness and, you know, just getting everybody match ready, of course, but generally it's meant for experimentation and, you know, in like trying out certain tactics and formation so that you're not doing this against Napoli or something, or against Milan or something. You know, you're not like, oh, let me try and put Ramsey and Regista against, Barcelona in the Champions League or something. So I appreciate that very much from Allegri. I mean, the main thing that I thought of when I, you know, read about this this interesting tactical change was really a pretty direct comparison with, well, with Christian Eriksen, actually, of Inter. So, you know, as we know, Eriksen, yeah, went to Inter, was pretty terrible for the first year and a half or so. So much so that Beppe Marotta publicly said that he's on the transfer market and he's been listed. They tried to get rid of him, you know, didn't work. Then they're like, well, I guess we're going to have to use him then. We're going to have to do something. And they did. And they changed his position because at Spurs, he was, from what I understand, at Spurs, he was basically a trequartista. And then Conte changed it to Regista position. And I mean, he flourished. He was fantastic. And, you know, really a integral part of that Inter, you know, Scudetto winning side. And yeah, I mean, I see a lot of comparisons there with Ramsey. You know, came in from another North London side, this time on a free, but came in from, you know, another part of North London. London there has been pretty terrible overall. And probably not been as public about, you know, listing him on the transfer market, but I think everybody knows that we kind of, you know, wouldn't shed a tear if he left. But nobody's bought him. So now it's at the point where it's like, well, we have to just use him. I mean, we have to do something with him, right? I mean, he hasn't violated any rules. He hasn't done anything.
Do we, though? Like, do we have to have him on the field?
I mean, okay, on the field, I mean, I don't know. But I mean, we're contractually obliged to do something with him, I guess. But yeah, okay, no, we're not technically not obligated to play him. But I mean, I don't know. We kind of have to do something with him. You know, again, he's done nothing to warrant like being played in or frozen out the side. You know how, you know, players do that. They like, I don't know, rebel or something or do some stupid stuff. And then they're like, all right, you've been banished to Middle Earth. But no, he's done nothing wrong. So he's just been a professional. So, you know, we have no reason to like ostracize him. So, I mean, we just have to do something with him. And I think, yeah, why not experiment with putting him in Regista? At the moment, doesn't seem like anybody else is, you know, playing a blinder in that position. So, I mean, you know, not like we have Andrea Pirlo playing that position right now, unfortunately. So, yeah, I'm all for experimenting with it in preseason and, yeah, frankly, seeing how it goes. And, I mean, it could turn out to be another Christian Eriksen transformation. Yeah, why not? And if it doesn't work, then I don't know. Thursday night, Channel 5, mate. See you, Aaron. Maybe ship you off back to Arsenal. I don't know.
So it you mean playing like isn't reason enough to ostracize somebody? No, Sergio talked about Rugani and getting significant minutes as a nightmare scenario. No, this is a nightmare scenario for me. Is Aaron Ramsey playing as the Regista in a game that matters? And also, you want to talk about injuries too. There's no guarantee that Ramsey is going to be healthy enough to even do that. This is one of the reasons why I really want this Locatelli transfer to come down, because I don't want this happening in a real game, because I don't have any faith in Ramsey to be able to be effective right now. He has not shown the ability to effectively play soccer in a Juventus midfield at all over the last 2 years, you know, and this is one of Max's, you know, this is one of Max's things where he'll try you everywhere. Like I said, you know, Federico Bernardeschi comes back out tomorrow and he'll probably be on the depth chart at center back because that's just been Bernardeschi's experience under Allegri. I don't see an experiment like this working out if Allegri keeps going with it. I mean, sure, try now, like you said, Chucks. I mean, doing something in preseason friendlies that don't matter are it you know, that's infinitely preferable to the way that Pirlo had to do it last year, in terms of just he had to start experimenting in games that counted because he had no preseason. But please God, don't let this actually go bleed into the season. And as to the rest, you know, I like, you know, I do like that he's kind of lighting a fire under Kulusevski, and Kulusevski actually later came out and talked about how much he's learning from Allegri. Had a lot of good things to say. I'd love to see him charged up and playing the way we all think he can play. But yeah, that was really one of the takeaways for me from what he was saying at the end, was just at the end of that game, was just, no, I don't ever want to see Aaron Ramsey playing in a role like that in a game that matters.
All right, we're going to wrap things up with a couple of Twitter questions here. The first one is directly for our very own Sergio Romero from David Desberg at the True ROAC. Continuing with Sergio's article of the Ronaldo era wasn't a failure, but it must end piece a couple of weeks ago. How much time is needed, in your opinion, for Juventus to both be financially powerful and legitimately competitive? Are there any major assets or personnel that must move to make this possible?
First of all, shout out David, always listener of the pod. He always asks questions. No, not really. I guess COVID for it to be over, which was kind of like the main argument I made in that article, you know, that how you know, badly, you know, COVID screwed over Juventus and their, you know, their plans and what they wanted to do with the club and with the Cristiano Ronaldo signing. And also, honestly, you know, given how, you know, the position they're in, and, you know, going back to the Caio Jorge, that guy, you know, going back to his signing, you know, what we were talking about, there were a lot of rumors that, you know, Juve might just wait it out and get him on a free on January because they didn't want to part with like 2 million euros. And it was like, okay, if it's gotten this bad that we can't just give out 2 million euros, like I can't imagine how badly, you know, the finances must be actually doing. So to me, I think the only path for Juve at this point is hope that, you know, vaccinations do their thing. There's not another, you know, big lockdown. They can start having fans back in the stadium. They can start kind of, you know, going back to normal and, you know, make a deep European run. And then after that, hope that Ronaldo's contract either runs out or they actually, you know, manage to transfer him out, and then start building from scratch. Because at this point, the way this roster is constructed, the way, you know, the pandemic's still, you know, not quite over in many parts, and definitely not in Italy, where they're not going to have full stadiums anytime soon. So it's just going to have to be a waiting game at this point, given the roster, given that, you know, the big domino to fall was Cristiano Ronaldo and they didn't move him. It's just going to be a waiting time. I don't really foresee any scenario in which they can be this, you know, quote unquote financial powerhouse anytime soon. I mean, especially because, you know, they still have financial commitments down the road. They're doing that awesome financial move, which is kind of kicking things down the road and figuring it out later. Like Federico Chiesa, sure, he's a Juve player right now, but they still have to make the big financial outlay, I think, a couple of years down the road. Manuel Locatelli, if the reports are true, they're going to get him this year, sure, but the big financial outlay is a couple of years ahead. So, you know, again, like at this point, it's going to be a 2-3 maybe even 4-year process in which they can kind of like rebuild, retool, and get back to a point that they kind of were pre-pandemic, where they were shelling out 40 million euros for Dejan Kulusevski, where they were shelling out 80 plus for Matthijs de Ligt. Like, to go back to that point, it's going to be a process, and it's going to take a multi-year period of time for them to go back to that.
And I think that's something we need to clarify as well, is that, you know, people see this 400 million euro influx of capital and they think, okay, well, snap of the fingers, Juve is good. Let's go out and, you know, the Locatelli deal will be done just like that. They can maybe add a couple other pieces. Well, no, that's to cover the losses that are currently on the books and that they have projected for the upcoming year. And, you know, it's not a case of it's $400 million for Federico or 400 million euros for Federico Chiellini to be like, all right, let's go have some fun on the transfer market, like say Man City or Man United. Not quite. So yeah, Juventus coming back to being just simply financially stable again is going to take some time, because the pandemic, as we've been saying for months now, has just absolutely crushed them. Like I think few teams of Juve's size have seen.
And even Manchester City is crying poor. Like, you know, the whole thing with Harry Kane, this was being brought up in the main Slack channel for SB Nation Soccer today, just how they're, you know, they're refusing to meet and come anywhere close to Tottenham's price for Kane, which is why that whole standoff is starting in the first place. And they're a team with, you know, $8 zillion in oil money, and they're backing off the market. Manchester United has made a single signing, which was Jadson Sancho. That was hefty. That was, I think, 75 million or something like that. But
they,
that's the only thing they've
Ferran as well from Real Madrid.
Oh, that's right. They did get Ferran. Yes, you're right.
They're really the only ones that spent like legitimate money.
Yeah, but even then, that's only two players. Where, you know, after a season like Manchester United had this year, you would be expecting a lot more. You know, how they were initially one of the teams that one thought might take Cristiano Ronaldo off Juventus's hands if they wanted to. But, you know, in this post-COVID economy, it is what it is, and it's going to be like this probably for another couple of years, like you said, Danny.
And Real Madrid also, you know, I don't think they've made a single signing yet.
Have they done anything?
I don't believe they have.
No.
Some people think
that they're still marshaling everything for one giant Kamehameha at Mbappe. But like, other than that,
shout out to the Dragon Ball Z reference.
Shout out to Dragon Ball Z. Yeah, it's not just us. I mean, we were affected more than those clubs, because we don't have, you know, the enormous TV money that the Premier League gets. We don't have the brand-based stuff that Barcelona and Real Madrid have that give them that ability to spend. Although when you look at Barcelona and what they've done with them to themselves financially, that's another story altogether. And that was brewing even before the pandemic started. But yeah, it's not just us, it's everybody. This is, you know, this is going to take a while.
Yeah, and just a quick note on Real Madrid. They just had basically six players or so come back from loan. So that's, I mean, Bale came back from loan, Luka Jovic, Ceballos, Ødegaard, Jesus Vallejo, et cetera, et cetera. And, oh, and they did sign, well, he was on a free, and David Alaba. So yeah, indeed. We're, you know, ain't no money going around.
But who knows how many of those will stay, right?
True.
All right, final question here from at @oldman_rod. Christian Romero had a crap season at Genoa, but went on to be a beast in Bergamo. The deal that took him there was very poor. I agree. What is the likelihood that Juventus mess up with a Demiral deal as well?
in absolute terms, unlikely, because at the numbers that I'm seeing, the full operation of loan plus option to buy are at, I think it would still end up as a profit for Juventus. Now I'm checking that.
It would end up being around 30 million totals from
30 million total. Juventus paid Sassuolo 18 for him.
Yeah.
So that is profit for Juve, as opposed to Romero, which was essentially, I think we sold him at a loss, didn't we? Or very close to, or at least very close to a wash.
I think it wasn't a loss, but yeah, I think that the profit was really minimum. Like it was almost nothing. Like I don't think it was a loss, but it definitely wasn't any significant type of money either.
Yes. So if those numbers are right, then you're looking at a $12 to $17 million worth of profit, right? Am I doing my math right? Probably not. I suck at math. But yeah, so in absolute terms, the deal that the reports are saying on the table is does represent a decent profit off of what Juventus paid for him. So I don't think it, I think it would have to be really, I think it, things would have to go really, really poorly on the Juventus end in terms of what Demiral, if Atalanta were to flip Demiral, what it would go for that to really be considered a failure.
Well, that's why the Romero deal has looked so bad. Not only was it bad-ish the first, you know, when Juventus initially loaned him, but the fact that he absolutely took a huge step forward as a player.
Yeah.
And now obviously has Fabio Paratici coming after him again. £50 million. Like, hey,
So he wanted him. He wants him now. He didn't want him last. He didn't want him on the team last summer. Like, what's that?
Another piece of the puzzle, isn't it?
Yeah, I know that's just Paratici being terrible at his job is what that is. But there's more of a sporting risk in terms of Demiral ending up really, really good at Atalanta and not really, really good at Juve, then there is a financial risk in terms of profit.
Yeah, which might happen. You know, it might happen. Like, it is one of those things that to me, you know, Demiral has shown a lot of flashes, a lot of potential, but it's, again, you know, we're 2 years into his Juve stint and he's still making a lot of the same mistakes that he made when they first signed him, right? And it was like, oh, he's this raw prospect. And it's like 2 years after, and it's kind of still a raw prospect. And at some point, you're no longer a raw prospect. You're just a, you know, dude who makes a lot of mistakes. So, you know, I honestly, who knows? I think if Atalanta swindles Juve out of their two center back prospects and Daniele Rugani is playing minutes, I mean, at that point, the mismanagement of this team on that center back depth, when a couple of years back it was like, oh, we're like, you know, we're set for the next 10 years when it comes to center backs. And if that ends up happening, just like Sam said, like financially, it's going to make sense if it comes, you know, if worse comes to worse and Demiral, you know, finally becomes a top center back in the league. Financially, it's not going to really come back to bite Juventus all that much. But sporting wise, it's going to be like, okay, what are we doing that, you know, these two guys who we had signed, you know, they just go elsewhere and they completely flourish and they just couldn't show that here. Like, what are we doing as a team, you know, development wise that they couldn't reach those heights here, right? So that's going to be what's going to reflect poorly on the team if it comes to that. But we'll see. We'll see. I mean, we all know Demiral is a talented dude. He hasn't been able to put it together. Only time will tell if he ends up putting it together in Atalanta.
Definitely. And I think the continued youth development is something that we could spend another hour's worth of podcast episode on, but that will have to wait at least another week. As always, thank you very much for your Twitter questions. You can send them to us at Juventus Nation on Twitter. You can also follow us on there. You can follow us on Facebook at Black and White and Red All Over. You can subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts or iTunes, on Google Podcasts, or on Spotify. If you listen on Apple Podcasts, please rate us, review us, write all the nice things that you so please. So, with all that being said, for Sam, for Chucks, and for Sergio. This is Danny saying thank you very much for listening, and we will come to you guys again next week.